Invictus by William Ernst Henley. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul. In the fell clutch of circumstance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Under the bludgeonings of chance, my head is bloody but unbowed. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade, and yet the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how strait the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. In high school English class, we had to memorize this poem, Invictus, and I didn't like it. It just seemed so dark. Beyond this place of wrath and tears looms but the horror of the shade. So basically, after all this life suffering, we die, and that's bad too. But that doesn't matter because I'm the captain of my soul. What? To my defense, this was the 1990s, the decade of jaded and more ironic than thou behavior. We wore t-shirts from thrift stores. My personal favorite was the one that said, Weight Watchers Third Annual Bake Off. As well as one that was a dentist's office, the logo being a piece of candy. We listened to music with unintelligible words because who cared what they were saying anyway? Being a slacker was so cool. Caring was not cool. So this poem, it was so full of vigor and self-determination. We just wanted to say, chill out. Just calm down, man. So we ask our English teacher, what is up with this poem? And she said, it's Nelson Mandela's favorite poem. Reciting it got him through 27 years in a prison cell in South Africa. Think about what reciting this poem could get you through. And we said, who? And she rubbed her head in this way I see teachers do a lot. Have you seen this before? I imagine so. And she said, oh boy, okay, I think we're going to skip diagramming sentence structure today so I can tell you about Nelson Mandela. And so we learned about Madiba, nicknamed Nelson by his teachers at his Christian mission school, raised by leaders of his tribe after his parents died when he was young. He stood in the doorway listening as heads of other tribes negotiated and compromised around the fireplace. As a small child, he learned negotiation. Madiba, as a small child herding cattle and questioning the system of apartheid in South Africa, a system into which he was born. Apartheid, now what's that? And our teacher rubbed her forehead again. Oh, how do you not know this? And she explained, South Africa was a Dutch colony, and racial segregation was practiced. But when the Dutch left in 1948, the National Party formalized racial segregation, and they enlarged it quite a bit. And she explained, and even we cooler-than-thou teenagers were shocked by what was happening in South Africa. See, in 1948, four categories were introduced. You could be white, Indian, colored, or black. You had to be one of those four, and the categories were fairly arbitrary because, like in the United States, everyone's sort of a mishmash of things. Nobody really remembers what they were centuries and centuries ago in their family. So when you turned 18 years old, if it wasn't clear by your skin color which group you belonged to, the government just assigned you one, just whichever one they thought you were, and it went on your national ID. And from then on, you lived with that group of people in that nation state. So people were always getting divided from their family, two dark-skinned parents who happened to have a light-skinned child, and bam, at 18, that child has to go live with a whole different nation state. The four groups were required to live completely independently, and there was no leeway in the categories, and thousands of people had to move to live with their racial category. White children attended white schools, black children attended black schools, and white schools had about 4 times more funding than other schools. Black people paid higher taxes. White people had access to the best beaches and parks. Black people couldn't appear on television, which just seems so random and cruel. The 4 groups couldn't intermarry. In 1970, the White National Party decided that those people that were in the black category couldn't be citizens anymore. They couldn't vote, and they couldn't have political representation. Of course, there were all kinds of uprisings and protests and attempts to overthrow the government, but any sort of protest was met with quick and violent force. Nonviolent protesters were told to disperse, and when they did, they were shot in the back. And that's what happened to Nelson Mandela. He was spied on. Frustrated with the non-progress of his non-violent actions, he was grief-stricken and he was afraid. One of his comrades, one of his friends who he'd been working with, was shot in his bed while he slept by the National Party, just killed in his 20s. So Nelson Mandela traveled to Morocco to learn guerrilla fighting techniques. This brief period in Mandela's life, this little time when he turned to violent means to overthrow a violent and oppressive government, is trotted out by his critics, most often in their attempts to discredit his heroic life. And yes, Mandela did stand in the doorway of a more violent school of activism. He did hover there for a moment. But I challenge all of us, me especially, all of us that like to play armchair quarterback and think, I could have done it differently. Could we have? When you spend your entire life, from birth to adulthood, with no representation in government, living under a system of apartheid, when every person you love suffers, when the man you work most closely with for justice is killed in his bed while he sleeps, wouldn't you be tempted a little? If decade after decade after decade passed, and peaceful protests and civil disobedience brought nothing but violent crackdowns from the government, well, you would wonder how you could make change. So Mandela co-founded a group called Spear of the Nation, which carried out acts of sabotage to demand change from the government while causing the fewest possible casualties. They targeted power plants, telephone lines, and transport links at night when most people were at home in their beds and not working. Mandela, always looking at the long range, said that doing things of sabotage and causing the fewest casualties would lessen the impact, lessen the chance of a civil war later. When black people had rights, they didn't want there to be a civil war over things they had done earlier. Most of the world community felt like a civil war in South Africa was pretty inevitable. But the world community also realized that it would be an utter disaster if that happened, because we had 4 nation states all pitted against each other. For his work with Spear of the Nation, Mandela was arrested and sentenced to life in prison in his 7-by-8-foot cell with only a straw mat for a bed. Even then, Mandela was no cynic. He started what he called the University of Robben Island, in which prisoners led courses in their field of expertise. Prisoners taught each other because they weren't allowed to have any more formal schooling. They weren't allowed to have books. The UN and many other nations pressured South Africa to free Mandela, but the United States actually was in favor of his jailing, because they were afraid that he was a communist. Reagan was so afraid of communism that he thought that Mandela might be a communist, so we supported his imprisonment. Finally, in 1990, as communism was on the wane and international pressure was at an all-time high, Mandela was released. He immediately began working with the South African government to end apartheid and secure the right to vote for black South Africans. And in 1994, a dream that South Africans could hardly have stood to dream came true. Not only could black people vote, but a black person was elected president of South Africa. It must have seemed like a miracle. So Mandela was the new president, and as president, what was he to do? After watching friends die at the hands of white people in power, after being imprisoned for all of his children's childhood, after 3 decades behind bars, after watching poverty and despair destroy generations of people of color, a very popular choice in South Africa would have been retribution, would have been restrictions on white people, give them a taste of their own medicine, or at least punish those who had the most power, at least send them to prison. But Mandela believed in this thing called Ubuntu, which coincidentally is perhaps the most cherished of Unitarian Universalist beliefs, although I don't think we've ever called it by that name. Ubuntu means that we are bound together in ways we cannot always see or sense, that we are all one. As Unitarian Universalists, we strive to follow 7 principles, and the 7th is respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Ubuntu. Mandela resisted revenge because he felt deeply that we're all one. As has been widely reported in the news, he invited his prison guards to sit in the front row at his presidential inauguration, not to taunt them, but in acknowledgement that we're all the same, that we all struggled, and we all do things that we later regret, and that he got it, and that he forgave them. That he forgave all the oppressors of South Africa, Ubuntu. Mandela rebuilt South Africa. He created the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which is used all over the world now. It allows victims to tell their stories, and it allows perpetrators to say, "I'm sorry." He steered the country away from an almost certain civil war, a civil war that would have been an utter bloodbath as 4 nations fought each other. He gave people a chance to speak and to listen. It's difficult for us to appreciate Nelson Mandela in our own time, but centuries from now, people will raise up his name of a man, Madiba, Nelson Mandela, who fearlessly said he was willing to die for the freedom of his fellow South Africans. A man whose first action after being imprisoned for nearly 3 decades was to publicly forgive those who imprisoned him. The adults we see celebrating the life of Nelson Mandela today in South Africa, they grew up in an impossibly cruel regime. They attended subpar schools. They couldn't apply for the good jobs. They faced hopelessness on a daily basis. But Madiba shunned hopelessness. He turned away from despair and demanded a better nation for all of his brothers and sisters in South Africa. I wish I could say that the cynicism that was so cool in the 1990s was left in the 1990s, but unfortunately, our country is more jaded than ever. We're so used to our elected leaders lying to us, it's almost not worth reporting. We're so used to assuming they only have their own best interests at heart. But Tata Mandela, a politician so trusted, so beloved by the people of South Africa that they called him Tata, Father, Daddy, Daddy Mandela. It's so hard to imagine calling a politician Daddy. I just don't trust them that much. Tata believed that his reality didn't have to be the reality forever. He gave everything he had, his whole life, to raise up his fellow South Africans. In the news, you may have heard that at Mandela's funeral in South Africa, which was appropriately held at a football stadium, the man loved his soccer, that there was a booing, a low hiss emanating from the poorest of the poor in the crowd. The hiss was when the current president of South Africa took the stage, and it reflected many citizens' belief that the current president isn't doing enough about economic inequality in South Africa, which is still quite extreme. Many world news commentators tut-tutted at this. How could they behave that way at Mandela's funeral? How disrespectful. But I think he would have loved it. I can see him laughing, saying, yes, when the world's eyes are on you, you hold those politicians' feet to the fire. Pressure your leaders for what is right. Never, ever ignore the injustice that you see. No matter how poor you are, no matter how hopelessly you feel, you can hold politicians responsible for what they have promised. Yes, that hissing boo heard around the world was proof that Tata Mandela didn't just abolish apartheid in South Africa. He abolished the cynical belief that we hold no sway over our leaders. I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. I do not mourn Mandela's death so much as rejoice that he lived and left us the model that he did, a selfless devotion to humanity, a lived belief in Ubuntu. We are all one. We have to forgive each other. Tata, Daddy, showed us we have to demand justice from our leaders. Centuries from now, people will hold up his example, but we, my spiritual companions, we tread on the same earth that he did. However, before our memories turn him into a saint, into a person out there that we couldn't possibly relate to, much less be like, let's remember that Mandela himself said he was no saint unless a saint was a person who sinned and failed and then got up and tried again, again and again. The wonder of Mandela is that he was us. He was fully human. He was fully imperfect. And so as we celebrate his life, let's remember not to worship him, but to emulate him, because he was just a human being living at full capacity. We too can demand justice. We too can forgive again and again and again. I will close as I began with poetry, but this time the Maya Angelou poem you just heard. No sun can outlast its sunset, but it will rise again and it will bring the dawn. Yes, Mandela's day is done, yet we, his inheritors, will open the gates wider for reconciliation. We will respond generously to the cries of blacks and whites and Asians and Hispanics and the poor who live piteously on the very floor of our planet. He has offered us understanding. We will not withhold forgiveness, even for those people who do not ask. Nelson Mandela's day is done. We confess it in tearful voices, yet we lift our own to say, thank you. Thank you, our Gideon. Thank you, our David, our great courageous man. We will not forget you. We will not dishonor you. We will remember and be glad that you lived among us, that you taught us, and that you loved us all. We'll now sit for about 2 minutes of silence.